to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I am Joe Galina, and broadcasting from his in-law's house. This is your grandpa-in-law, maybe. It's Scott Chu. Scott, how's it going?
Doing good. I'm the classic podcasting location of your wife's parents' basement.
Oh, everybody does that,
like,
right?
Yeah. I feel like I'm legit now because I can record from my wife's parents' basement. If you haven't done that, you're not really a podcaster, are you?
Well, you've already broadcasted or podcasted from a hotel room earlier in the season, right? And, you know, I mean, look, it's the life of a fantasy analyst, right? You write articles wherever you can. Whether it be on the way to work, on a train, on a bus, but everyone should appreciate the effort that you're making.
you gotta dig deep to find ways to talk about fantasy baseball that doesn't bore everyone else to death. And sometimes that's in a hotel room. Sometimes that's on a bus.
Yeah. And look, hey, if anyone's listening, we appreciate it. And I'm sure there are people that are listening, and we do appreciate your support. The fact that you're listening while week two of the NFL season is fully underway just shows your dedication out there to fantasy baseball and baseball itself. And Scott and I love baseball and want to thank you for checking in with us this week. And Scott, you're not at a wedding. I know it seems like every other week you're at a wedding.
So yeah, my wife's popular. I'm not, but my wife is very popular. So
what do you do at a wedding? Are you the kind of guy that just hangs out in the corner, just checking his phone all the time? Do you get up and dance? What's Scott Chu like at a wedding? Who is Chu?
He is someone who eats and then eats a little more and then gets dragged around by his wife. That is generally what I'm doing. So I might be dancing if she feels like dancing, or I might be eating if she feels like eating, or I might be messing around on my phone because she's tired. It's great. It's great. Very all scripted. Right.
So glad that you could be with us, Scott. Thanks for making the effort. And hey, this is going to be our last regular season podcast, so wanted to get one in for you. And during the off season, we're going to be broadcasting every other week, and we've got lots to cover, and we're going to keep it interesting and fun for you. So again, thanks for tuning in. So let's start with just some news there, Scott. Hyunjin Ryu, one of your favorites, today placed on the IL, Toronto Blue Jay starting pitcher due to a strained neck.
Yeah, and you know, at least it wasn't till September that they shut him down for the season. You know, a really up and down season for Hyunjin Ryu. Got blew up a couple times. Really interesting to think about what he's going to look like next season. This is not an injury that's going to affect him going into the off season. I mean, like, it might affect him for another couple weeks or so, but you know, he's going to be fine. This is not something that would carry into 2022. So I'm interested to see what it looks like, because we saw one of the best pitchers in baseball through 2019 and 2020. Yeah. And then again, this inconsistent season, if people react a little heavily to that, he might be a really nice opportunity for drafters a little later than maybe he should be.
Yeah. ERA over 10 over the past month. And I'm just wondering, you know, because my Yankees are tanking, and I could go on for a half hour just on the Yankees. And in a way, I almost feel like I don't want them to make the playoffs this way. At least I'm sure there's not going to be a full rebuild if they don't make the playoffs, but there'll be some changes. But maybe it'll just punctuate the need to make changes. But anyway, the reason why I say that is because I wouldn't be surprised if the Blue Jays sneak into the playoffs, and you wonder if Ryu would be ready to pitch then.
Very well could be. I think they'll make that decision on a series by series basis. And I think shutting him down for the rest of the regular season was the only chance they had if they get in. Yeah. However, he hasn't been pitching well lately, but he was also one of their better chances to get in. It's not a super deep rotation. So I think they're doing what they have to do, because if they're going to win in the playoffs, it's going to be that three man rotation. Yep. And it doesn't line up quite as well with some of their opponents, but hey, you got Robbie Ray at the top. So if they can get in, they're obviously very dangerous. I think a lot of teams would like to see them just miss.
And in real life baseball, if they don't win a World Series within the next 3 years, I'd be very, very surprised. Incredible offense, some good young pitching, some of it in the major leagues now, and then some of it on its way here. And So as a Yankee fan, that makes me sad. But anyway, they've got a pitcher that they're going to be facing tomorrow, Shane Baz. I hope I pronounced that last name correct. I tried to find the pronunciation, so I'll just go with the way I feel that it's pronounced. But Shane Baz, another Rays prospect, is being promoted, and he's going to be facing the Rays or feeding him to the Wolves.
Well, I mean, maybe it's, you know, the opponent that's facing the Wolf, right? He's been unbelievable in the minor leagues, especially the last three seasons. I mean, obviously he did not pitch. We don't know how he was we don't know how he was in 2020. There was good reports, but obviously we don't have those numbers. But like this season in the minor leagues, it was a total of 78.2 innings pitched and strikeout rates that are just awesome, right? 40% when it was in Double A, 36% in Triple A, not walking anybody. He's just been unbelievable down there. So, you know, like obviously in a spot start situation, spot starting for the Rays is really scary because they don't let the regular starters go very long, right? How long are they going to let a spot starter? But at least if you look back at his game logs in the minor league, something that's easy to do on like Fangraphs, at least he went six innings last time. So it's not as though he isn't stretched out, but even that was his first six inning start this season, right? Everything else was four or five innings. That's a realistic expectation. Now he can still do very, very well with that, right? He can pitch really well, like four or five really good innings, but the wind's going to be really tough unless they have like an opener and it's not going to be a big number of strikeouts. It's really going to be more of a ratio game for him. So the margin for error is tight, but God, not many people are pitching as well as he is in the minor leagues.
Yeah. And like you said, his strikeout rate just on the 13 strikeouts per nine innings this season, 1.5 walks per nine. Would you have the guts to start him? Like, let's say if you're in a playoff situation in one of these leagues where it's head to head, I guess it's possible he might get two starts this week. Would you take a chance and pitch him against the Blue Jays?
I mean, what do I need, right? I mean, this point in the season, we're talking 12 to 14 games left for all teams, right? How many starts is that? Who's getting four starts the rest of the season, right? I mean, that's probably the max. The available options are low, right? On one hand, not as many teams in your league are trying to stream pitchers. On the other hand, there's not much time, is there, right? If you're just desperate for innings and ratios, yes, I would totally do it. Mm-hmm. If it's a tight race and, I'm not sure he's somehow to use to just get, just to get me over the hump. I'm not sure that's there. I don't want to say he's a desperate play, but it's more of a deep league / I really need innings, right? Mm-hmm. I just need all the innings I can get. And there's only so many innings available, particularly from someone with this kind of upside.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk closers. And we're moving at a fast pace because, look, it's the end of the season. We got to get as much information to you as possible. But Jake McGee, who has served as the San Francisco Giants, who have been one of the surprise teams, of course, in baseball this year. Jake McGee went to the IL with an oblique strain. Tyler Rogers, who kind of backed up McGee in the beginning of the season, they were kind of co-closers, but McGee kind of took over that spot. And Tyler Rogers looked like he was going to take over as the closer, but now looking like maybe Dominic Leone could also be in line for some saves. And I'm just going to give you a few other names from bad teams. Gregory Soto, now your Tigers, went to the IL with a fractured finger. Looks like Fulmer's going to be the closer there. You got Joe Barlow for the Rangers, Kyle Finnegan, Chris Stratton. You don't always need to go to teams like the Giants to find saves, especially if you need saves now for this last couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, but do go to the Giants for saves if you need them and get Tyler Rogers. He's a really interesting pitcher to watch. He throws like submarine. He throws this slider that goes up, right? It's really bizarre. I mean, just look him up. Pitching Ninja's done him a ton of times. I know Nick has talked about him before. He's got really weird stuff. And you would think that his strikeout rate would be a lot higher. from the way he pitches. And if you go and look at the game log, which is always kind of fun with relievers, he's got like a bunch of zero strikeout games and a weird number of three strikeout innings, right? Because he never throws more than one inning. Like, I think he's done that once or twice this season, but he throws one inning and it seems like he either strikes everyone out or is just totally dominant, or, you know, they read the submarine well and they hit it hard. The nice thing about the Giants is that their upcoming schedule is not scary, right? They actually have one of the weakest schedules around. So they're tougher games. They do have six games against the Padres coming up, but if the Giants win those games, those are likely save opportunities, right? Like, that's not, certainly not unwinnable for one of the best teams in baseball. They have one game against Atlanta and then six sweet, sweet games against Arizona and Colorado. So there are saves in there. And even if, like, normally at this point in the season, I would say do not go for the platoons. There's not enough opportunities. But the Giants are a team where every game is winnable. They have a bunch of teams that are very beatable for them. And they have a pitcher who they have relied upon all season, right? So Tyler Rogers has been there for them all season. He's gotten tons of hold for them. He has 28 holds on the season and a 1.97 ERA. Like, the strikeouts aren't quite there, but he doesn't walk guys. He never gives up home runs. This is exactly what you want. And again, the strikeout numbers are going to be really come and go, right? Like, he'll strike out three guys because they just can't, you know, the slider's on and they can't handle it, looking like it's going to hit him in the chin, or, you know, they're reading it well and they make some more contact, but you can't pass it up. If he is out there, you have to get him. A couple other guys I was thinking about, you know, Michael Fulmer has been good lately, right? Like, he's been a little hit and miss this season, but this month at least he only gave up a run in one appearance, and the rest of the time he's getting some strikeouts. He does have a save in two of his last three games. I mean, I'm down with that, right? The Tigers, again, if they win, it's going to be tight, right? And it's not as though, again, it's not as though that their schedule is like unbeatable, right? They've got three games against the Twins and three games against the Royals. You're telling me the Tigers can't beat them a couple times, right? I know they can, right? Six games against the White Sox is no fun, but the other half are good, right? And that's the reason I keep bringing this up, is because that's what's so important in terms of like looking at these closers, especially some of these bottom of the barrel closers. Like, how many winnable games are out there for them? How many games are out there where you feel like they have a chance, right? Because if you're looking at a team like Arizona, right? Not only are they a bad team, they've got three games against the Giants, three games against the Dodgers, a game against Houston, and four against Atlanta. How many wins are they pulling out there, right? How many wins? Like, you could tell me, if you told me, well, this guy's the closer for Arizona, I'd be like, and what's he going to get, two? Right? Like, that's a horrible schedule for him. So really look at the schedules for these closers, really get an idea of what, you know, what are the winnable games out there? What are the opportunities? I mean, one guy you listed in the notes from Texas, that's some, you know, Texas is a team where their schedule is not so bad, right? Three against the Yankees, who are hit and miss, one against White Sox, but then four against Baltimore, three against the Angels, three against Cleveland. Those are games that they are, I'm not saying they're going to win.
They can.
If they're going to win, it's against teams like that, right? That's what you're looking for. That's what you're after. So, I mean, that's really my approach to some of these closers. Now, like, stuff matters a little bit, but it's opportunity, 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 opportunity. And that's also why I, you know, there's guys with more talent that I was sort of almost less interested in. Like, so Chris Stratton taking over David Bednar, like you said, for the Pirates, not only are they not good, those four games against the Phillies, six against the Reds, those are tougher matchups, right? And it leaves just three games against the Cubs. And like, that's kind of like, it's hard to get more than one save in a series. Like, two is a miracle. So, I mean, how many saves is that? So make that, you know, sort of do a little bit of that, that calculus by looking at that remaining schedule and just seeing like, if they like, how many series can they win? Cause if you win a series, you know, there's a decent chance you get a save in the series. How many series can they win? Right? Like, game by game, that's hard, but how many series could they win? That's how you do it. And like, a team like the Giants, they could win every series they have left. Whereas Arizona will not. Maybe, but they won't. So that's really what you're trying to do to find those last minute relievers.
Yep. All right. Very good advice. Let's move on. And we're going to take a look at some hitters that have been kind of hot lately. And this guy, you kind of like, you just brought him up just like, you know, matter of factly a few weeks ago, and he ended up being a really nice player. Jose Siri, right, with the Astros. So take a bow with him. With Michael Brantley on the IL due to some right knee soreness, is starting to see some semi-regular at-bats. And, you know, it's like Siri on your Apple phone. Hey, Siri, can you give me fantasy production? And he's been getting it done. So the seasoned 26-year-old rookie, he's got good power and speed. Up until Saturday's action, had played in 9 games and already had 3 stolen bases. Strikes out a ton, but also a good fielder. So, you know, if Brantley continues to be out, Astros might keep him in the mix.
Yeah, so one thing about Siri, when I brought him up, it was because I didn't think that they had a lot of center field options out there. We weren't sure. And they ended up finding some other guys to play center, but Siri can do it. That should keep him on the roster for the rest of the season, especially with Brantley out. Here's the thing about Jose Siri. I didn't bring him up because I thought he was this amazing talent. I brought him up because he was raking in the minor leagues. And he's got this approach, and I'm almost afraid to make this comparison because I don't want you to think that I think that their career trajectories are the same. It's just more of an approach plus power speed combo. A guy you might remember by the name of Aristides Aquino, right? So he was with the Reds, went on this crazy home run tear, and no one has really heard much from him since, right? Because, you know, he like set the record for home runs for a rookie in X number of games. I mean, just all this stuff. Then he went away. It's because he's extremely aggressive at the plate. And pitchers didn't really know how to attack him. Because here's the thing. You can throw outside of the zone and still have the guy hit a home run, right? Like, especially these young, athletic, like really high athleticism players like a Jose Siri, who's got a ton of power and speed. Thing is, he's also going to strike out a boatload. I think that he's a pretty decent play for stolen bases, because he also pinch runs. So if he doesn't start, he still pinch runs. So if, you know, you don't have a ton of hitters on your bench and you're like, well, you know, I've got this dead spot because he's not starting. That's not true. He may actually steal a base. And guess what? He's about to start a 4-game series against the Angels, who are really bad at stopping runners, right? So you got a 4-game series. You got Jose Siri, who, yeah, he might strike out quite a few times, but he may also hit a home run because that's all he's trying to do anyway. And either he gets enough starts or enough pinch running opportunities, he's got a really good chance to steal a base or two in this series. So if that's what you're trying to do, I'm absolutely all about that, right? Especially if you've been relying on, you know, there are other players out there you may have been relying on to try to get a stolen base. I know you might've picked up like a, God, throwing names out of my head, but like a Lorenzo Cain, who's now day-to-day, and the Brewers are going to face the Cardinals, who are really, really good at stopping stolen bases. So he's definitely a guy that I think has some value in these like 5 outfield leagues. In a 3 outfield, there's just not enough there. He's not going to, you know, he might not play enough, but 5 outfield leagues, there's something there. There's power and speed, and there's not enough time in the season, quite frankly, for pitchers to figure him out all that much.
Yeah.
Right. Good point. He can just swing away.
Yep. Let's move on to Frank Schwindel, who's been playing first base for the Cubs since Anthony Rizzo was moved to the Yankees. And you look at this guy, has a long minor league career and a successful one where he hit for .286, had good power. So, you know, basically when he first came to, we spoke about him a few weeks ago, nice fantasy fill-in player, we thought, but he's forgotten that he's just a fantasy fill-in player, right? So I'm looking at, you know, he's been in and out of the major leagues for a few years, not much, but a 40 home run, 162 game average. And I'm wondering, you know, what the Cubs spring training is going to be looking like. I mean, this guy might stick.
Yeah. And you know, when we talked about him, what was really interesting, and I didn't have a lot of like scouting analysis on Frank Schwindel. He's a long, like you said, a long time minor leaguer, good plate discipline, not because he walks a ton, but because he makes plenty of contact, puts a lot of balls in play, walks enough, I guess. And that's kind of what he's doing now. The 6.5% walk rate, 16.1% strikeout rate. That's pretty normal. What's amazing, number one, it's just like the every day the guy's got 2 hits, right? But when you look at that history, when we last talked about him, the thing I said that was interesting is that he leaves teams and then they bring him back multiple times, right? When you see that once, it's usually like a Rule 5 thing, right? Like they went to this other team and then the other team sent them down. So they had to return him. But the Royals took him back. The Tigers took him back. And I think Oakland took him back, right? Mm-hmm. No, I'm sorry. Oakland. Yeah, Oakland took him back. So, like, teams kept bringing him back. Why do you bring back a 25, 26, 28, now 29-year-old minor leaguer? Because there's something there. And apparently this is what they saw. None of us saw it. But apparently in there, they had been hoping that he could make this kind of consistent contact for power. The Cubs are getting it, right? Mm-hmm. And good for them. I think you got to keep starting him because he's hitting right in the middle of the lineup. They're not facing a ton of tough pitching coming up. They're facing some teams that, you know, they're going to put some guys out there that are vulnerable to right-handed hitters, and that's what Schwindel is. So, and what else, you know, what else you can do? There's nothing, he should already be rostered in every league. If he's not, you need to get him, and you just need to plug him in and not worry about the why.
Right.
I mean, I could tell you again that, oh yeah, these other teams, they saw something. So that means something. And like, I can tell you that, but also at the end of the day, the results at this point, they just make it. So you just play him.
You
don't worry about
it. The next couple weeks. Yeah.
He'll be a tricky draft problem.
Yes.
Next season. But right now he's easy. Man, you just start him.
Mm-hmm. How about Lane Thomas with the Nationals? Spent the first 32 games of the season with the Cardinals, batted just 104 for them, but got traded to the Nationals, been batting leadoff, and look, it's a green with him. In his first 31 games with the Nationals, he's compiled a 308, 397, 538 triple slash and scored 23 runs and driven in 22 during that time period. So just looking at the difference in his approach from when he was with the Cardinals, he's been a little bit more aggressive at the plate and also just a little bit more disciplined too. His K rate dropped from 29.3 when he was with the Cardinals to 21.3. Like I said, batting at the top of the order seems to be agreeing with him. Good power and speed combo too.
Yeah, and I mean, he was really log jammed over in St. Louis when they had like 16 bazillion outfielders at any given time, some of which played gold glove defense, others had power and speed. And then there was Lane Thomas, who doesn't quite do any of that, right? So he always kind of looked like this backup outfielder. But with Washington, of course, a backup outfielder for other teams is a starter in Washington right now. So look, he's leading off. That's a really nice gig for fantasy. Right. But the RBI are really weird. He's getting a lot of RBI for a leadoff hitter in the National League. Mm-hmm. Right. That's bizarre. And I'm not saying you have to overanalyze it or anything. I'm saying that the bottom of the order for the Nationals is somehow hitting right now and he's taking advantage of it. So like, cool. I wish I had like more, like you can't, runs and RBI are fairly difficult to project, but again, they're going to face some teams that, you know, they're about to go on a very, very long road trip, right? They've got Miami, Cincinnati, and Colorado. I love to have him when he's in Colorado and even in Cincinnati, right? Because Cincinnati they pitch okay, but they're not like shut down pitching. They've got the nice small park. At Miami is tough. They've got good pitching and a big old ballpark. I think that, you know, if you're playing that whole ride the hot hand, which is a really decent strategy this time of the season, you can go for it as a fifth outfielder and a 12 teamer. But otherwise, I mean, there's not a lot to project going forward, right? Like he's not that good of a hitter. He's good enough. And again, these counting stats, I just don't see how they stick around. Just super hard to project. And the bottom of a really bad order is not usually a spot for all those RBI. So I wouldn't keep counting on those, but he could continue to score some runs and be useful for sure.
All right. Next guy that I put on our rundown, maybe better suited to talk about in the offseason, but I'll just bring him up, and if you have like one thing you want to say about him, it's fine. Austin Hayes, I mean, the Who had a classic tune, Won't Get Fooled Again. This is the kind of guy that it seems like every September he would just go off, right? And then you get all excited and you think, wow, you know, I'm going to grab this guy in preseason drafts, and, you know, maybe nobody noticed that he had a big September, but he's still only 25 years old, but I'm looking at his overall numbers. They're actually very good, and he's probably widely owned. But Austin Hayes, 21 homers, 254 batting average. Has he finally arrived?
Kinda. Right. So for him, it's all about power, and it disappeared in the summer.
Right.
Right. I mean, like, I don't always tell people to just go look at the monthly splits, because months are actually a fairly arbitrary breaking point. Right. Like, what's the difference between June 30th and July 1st, like nothing, right? But we just draw this arbitrary line. But what you do see is that in those summer months, that power evaporated. He had a hard time getting playing time in those months. He was at first, he was platooning a bit with Cedric Mullins, and then Cedric Mullins decided he wanted to be a AL MVP candidate. So it wasn't a platoon anymore. There's power here in this right-handed bat. I think, you know, he's young enough. He's got a little bit of speed. He's going to be a guy that I think might get a bit overdrafted because he's really aggressive, not like strikeout aggressive, just like, but he does make a lot of bad contact. Because he's willing to hit everything. Now, he doesn't miss quite as much, which is cool, but it also, you know, that bad contact can be really tough. He never walks. So like in OBP leagues, he's not that great, but I think he's going to be a lot. He's going to be a late power target. He's a guy that in a full season, especially because he plays in Baltimore, I could see him having a 30 home run season, 25-30 home run, not unlike his teammate, Anthony Santander, right? Yeah. Like I can see that kind of production. But like, again, how much are you willing to like put chips down on this is my sleeper? Because I think he could be Anthony Santander.
Right.
Right. Like that's there's the, what the upside
this season, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know firsthand.
Yeah. It's home run upside with a non-painful batting average.
Right.
Which
right.
is cool. Mm-hmm. But again, in context, right? It's cool in context as a fourth or fifth outfielder in 12 team leagues.
Excellent analysis. One thing I just will bring up is for the rest of the season when he's batting against left-handed pitching, might want to use him for DFS if, you know, you're just playing around. 301 batting average against lefties, 219 against righties, but very good.
Especially
enough.
At home.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
got to
yeah.
do it.
Yes. Bobby Dalbec, first baseman for the Red Sox. You know, classic tale of a power hitter, right? Just, you know, just goes on a streak, and he's on a streak now, right? His last seven games, 320 batting average, 414 OBP, 840 slug. So, right, like you said before, maybe ride the hot hand.
Yeah, and gosh, how many times are we going to talk about a guy like this, right? So, high strikeout, doesn't walk a ton, but he, I mean, how different is he from Miguel Sano? Hmm. How different is he from, you know, any other left-handed,
hopefully a little bit better, but I get what you're
saying. Right. But I mean, that's what we're talking about. And what's going to be really interesting is, especially going into the off season, the final numbers don't tell you about the ride, right? They don't tell you about what those numbers look like, because I'll tell you, he was absolutely unrosterable in fantasy for quite a bit this season. I mean, just could not roster him. Like, yeah, he's going to get to like 25 home runs, but a bunch of those home runs didn't count for anybody because you could not play him. He was terrible, right? So, I mean, yes, we could have this narrative that he learned a little bit more and maybe he's striking out a little bit less lately. Of course, he's on a hitting streak and he's definitely finding power. He's got, I think coming into Sunday's games, he had an extra base hit in like four straight games, hitting home runs. He swiped a base, which surprised me because this is like an all power guy, right? Mm-hmm, like 65, 70 grade power, no hit tool. Right. These players are really, really hard to get that excited about. The Tigers had a guy like this named Christian Stewart. It's just really hard to get too excited about them because they turn into right-handed platoon bats so fast. Like his career trajectory could be something really cool, and it could be Daniel Vogelbach, right? Who, but walking less, which is a problem, right? So that's the fear here. You know, you can ride the hot hand, except the only reason I'm going to just put a butt. Number one, two games off this week for the Red Sox. So if you're in a weekly league, obviously your lineup probably already set by the time you heard this. If it didn't, keep that in mind, two off games this week. That's painful. And the matchups aren't great. It's the Mets and the Yankees who pitch okay, and they aren't super vulnerable to left-handed bats. So I'm probably, you know, I've got a couple leagues where I don't have a better option. Like it's him versus Kyle Seager or something. So it's Dalbec, but in those shallower leagues, especially like a Yahoo league where there's no corner infield and it's just third base, it might be time to get off the ride for just a little bit, just for a little bit. But, you know, just something to keep an eye on. If things go poorly the rest of the season, it's not so much because he's not growing. It's because this is what he is. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who gets hot. And yes, again, when he gets hot, matchups don't matter anymore. But like, you can't predict when heat ends. And when you see some tough matchups plus off days at a time in the season where there's not much time left, it makes the decision more difficult. I'm not saying he's a must bench. I'm just saying, look at what's on your bench before you just lock him in because he's hot.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next couple players, both getting basically at least a second chance within the same season. Gavin Lux, former big-time Dodger prospect. Tell you the truth, he's partially responsible for contributed to killing one of my 15-team fantasy baseball leagues. Got demoted because he was terrible. Played 17 games with AAA and said, oh, that's how you hit a baseball. All of a sudden, now he's back with the Dodgers. Known as a second baseman, but now he's playing some outfield and showing some signs of life in his last 8 games, batting .381 with a .500 OBP and .524 slug. And I'll say it again. This is a time of year where, you know, you see some players that are really killing it at the end of the season, and it might drive up their draft price next season. And another guy I'll bring up, and then you could just put your analysis together, Garrett Hampson from the Rockies. We always love how the Rockies manage their players, right? Getting a chance now to play some center field, batting from the top of the lineup, and actually doing real well over his last just about 23 games. Yeah, .269 batting average. But even in his last couple weeks, .306, getting better. Last week, batting .412. So these are guys that are getting like a second chance to see what they could do.
Let's start with Garrett Hampson, because look, when we do like our off-season stuff, I'm going to be like, don't fall for it. Well, as we're talking about the last 2 weeks of the season, fall for it. Because right. He's about to have 3 straight series at home, right? He's going to get the Dodgers, the Giants, and the Nationals. And those aren't like great. I mean, the Washington Nationals are a great matchup, but he's going to get plenty of opportunities. The Dodgers might be good at pitching. They're not good at stopping stolen bases. So he's going to have opportunities there, and he could still get a single or a double in any particular game because it's in Colorado, right? So he comes a little bit matchup proof. Then he's got San Francisco, who again is pretty good, but it's going to be in Colorado. They're not great at stopping stolen bases, and I think he's going to draw like some of the weaker part of that rotation. That doesn't mean much because they've been very strong, but he should get the back end of that rotation. And then again, of course, he gets the Nats, where the whole Nats rotation is the back end of that rotation. So lots of good opportunities for Garrett Hampson. I think you got to be all over that. As far as Gavin Lux goes, for this next series, I'm interested because it's in Colorado, right? But after that, he's going to bat 7th or 8th. He might not play a certain day because the Dodgers don't need him to. And until, like, at this point, yeah, I'm really excited about the talent this kid has. But until he shows me that he can slug .450, like, I have to readjust what I expect from him. And the power has to come way down. I love the hit tool. And a lot of times these hit tool guys turn that into more power. He has not. He hasn't really done it in the minors. He's not done it in the majors. There's something there to unlock. It hasn't been unlocked yet. And I can no longer, like, we're getting to the point now where it's like, we can't just assume it will. There's like a gray science in there about like when to kind of tip the scale. And for me, the scale got tipped where it's like, I'm going to be so excited if he shows something, but I'm not going to bank on it until it starts happening. He's a guy that like, I'd love to hear in spring training hits like 6 home runs, right? Yeah. That's what I'd love. Because I don't care what against what pitching it is, because he's never done that against any pitching. So that's what I want to see. But until that happens, I'm very skeptical.
Gotcha. Okay. And I agree with you, as you should be skeptical. So let's take a look at 3 names that are fairly recent call-ups. And tell me if you think that, you know, they're worth anything for rest of season. Or maybe they're better off as just guys that should be on your watch list and, you know, for next season. Lewin Diaz for the Marlins. Overall stats, pretty ugly, but over the past week, batting .300 with 2 home runs in his last 8 games. Getting some playing time with the Jesus Aguiar on the IL. And Marlins just checking him out, thinking that maybe he could be their first baseman of the future. Says he's gotten more comfortable and confident at the plate, getting more regular playing time. Kyle Isbell, I think we spoke about him a while ago. Royals outfielder, spent the first few weeks of April with the Royals, but had a 41.7 K rate. They sent him down. He fixed his hitting tool a bit, in 104 games, batted .269 with 15 homers and 22 stolen bases. Those 15 homers and 22 stolen bases kind of open your eyes a bit. And more importantly, cut that strikeout rate down to 20.2. So the Royals checking him out because Michael A. Taylor is going to be a free agent at the end of the season. They were going to rebuild mode. They're always in rebuild mode lately. But and back to the Rockies, right? Ryan Vilade, MLB Pipeline, ranks him as the Rockies' fifth best prospect. Played for AAA, batted .286, seven home runs, 27 doubles, and stole 12 bases in 104 games this season. I like the 27 doubles to go along with the seven homers because you know, get some of that man strength, and all of a sudden you're playing in Colorado and hitting 25 home runs. What are we thinking?
Well, unfortunately for Vilade, there's five. Well, let's see. There must be seven outfield, you know, guys that can play the outfield in Colorado on the big league roster right now. And he's the youngest one and in Colorado. So he's screwed. He's right. Got no chance. Like there's just nothing he can do. Right. Like I hope he does something from like a baseball perspective, but from like a fantasy perspective, like that's like the worst place to be. The youngest outfielder for the Rockies on the major league roster. That's like, that's, you just don't play. Like you have no chance. So that's unfortunate. Kyle Isbell, he has some like interesting tools, but he's like, he's weird because he's going to, like, he had a little bit of hype as a prospect, but that was for like regular baseball, right? Because Isbell, he's a lefty. So he should get like a bigger side of a platoon. Like they might bench him against tough lefties, but the problem is like his best tool is his glove. And like the rest of the stuff is like pretty good, but it's hard to really project what those guys are going to do. Obviously he did quite well in the minor leagues with the 22 stolen bases. But like, again, you look at the WRC plus 115, that's pretty good, but like that isn't going to be quite as good in the majors. I do expect him to strike out a little more as he adjusts, which he's been doing so far. Not a ton of excitement there. That's more of like an AL only play. Cause again, he bats ninth in a possible platoon for the Royals. You know, sometimes fantasy baseball isn't that complicated. And when you bat ninth in a platoon for the Royals, the excitement you drive is going to be limited in redraft leagues. So that brings us to Lewin Diaz, who is interesting, right? So he's a really heavy fly ball hitter right now. A big, big power guy. Unlike these other guys, he's not in a platoon. He's going to play, right? So I really like that. And I love that he's got big raw power. He's actually a good fielder. Not that it matters because he's a first baseman. I mean, it matters, but it also doesn't matter that much. So he'll play, and that's great. But he's got this heavy, heavy fly ball approach. And you know where that's bad? Miami. That's horrible in Marlins Park because it's a really pitcher-friendly place. So on the road, I like him a lot more. In fact, this season, he has 10 extra base hits, right? About even number of games played, about even number of plate appearances, one extra base hit at home, nine on the road. And that's because he can get the ball in the air. He's got a couple home runs, right? He's got five home runs because he can get the ball up and out of there, right? So when he hits all those fly balls in Miami, everyone can just circle under him because the field's huge. It's a home run play for me. Because that's all he's really going to do. I don't expect a ton of batting average, which, you know, you probably shouldn't ever. He's never going to be like this big batting average guy. But there is power. And if you're desperate for power in a 15-teamer or maybe like a 12-teamer with big rosters, go for it.
Yeah. All right. Good analysis and good breakdown and reminding us of the limitations of trying to be a power hitter in Miami. That stadium, like you mentioned, is a pitcher's park. So as we close out this episode, any other players that you kind of catch in your eye based on soft schedules for the next week or two?
Yeah, so if there is a Rockies starter who's available in your league, so Garrett Hampson was a good one. Brendan Rodgers might be kicking around somewhere in your league. Those guys are good because they have a bunch of home games coming. And if you have to bet on something, it's betting on runs being scored in Colorado, right? Like that's just the way to go. So that's a really good one. And I'm almost afraid to mention this guy because everyone's mentioned him all times this season until now, I guess. Eugenio Suarez, he's looked really good in limited action this month. And if he can grab some playing time, he's got some homestands against Pittsburgh and Washington. which are really good matchups for him, particularly, but really all the right-handed bats in Cincinnati. And you know what, you know, how many guys, yeah, I hate using this line because we always use it, but like how many guys in your waiver wire have hit 40 plus home runs before? And the answer, I think it's Eugenio Suarez, yeah. Right? Or like Miguel Cabrera and Albert Pujols, right? Like that's the group. So it's something to watch. Now he's not getting a ton of playing time, but if he does, that's a place to go. Especially those home series in Great American Ballpark, also known mm-hmm. as Great American Small Park. It's a home run. Like you can hit home runs there. He's got a chance to do it. He just needs to get starts. And if he does, I'm not saying he will. I don't have any news about, oh, I think he's going to. I'm saying if he does, he could hit a couple of bombs and tank your batting average. But, you know, at this point in the season, there's only so much damage he can do to it. Yeah. And if you're desperate for home runs, not a lot of guys on the waiver wire have that kind of upside, especially playing at home against Pittsburgh and Washington. Just something to keep an eye on.
That's a great point because, like you mentioned, this late in the season, it's tough to get your batting average to your team batting average to go up much or to go down much because there's been so many at-bats. So good stuff. I haven't thought about Eugenio Suarez in a long time. So but it's a great analysis on your part to bring him up. But it's been a fun season and we're going to keep going, right, Scott? Got lots to talk about, you know, bounce back players. We're going to talk about Lindor, Bellinger, dynasty player options. You've got it. We're going to have a lot of fun this off season. And like we mentioned at the top of the podcast, we're going to broadcast every other week and, you know, just get you ready for fantasy baseball season 2022, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was a bummer. We couldn't record more in September. I know I got really busy, had some personal things going on. So a lot of that, you know, a lot of that's on me, but that's okay. Cause we're going to be able to go every other week.
But yeah.
Yeah. But we're going to be able to go every other week. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to do a lot of previews and stuff all off season. Might be able to find a couple fun guests. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as they don't charge us, I think it'll be just fine.
Yes. So Scott, it's been great working with you and I look forward to continue to working with you. Great to be a part of the Pitcher List network and family. It's really an awesome place to be a part of with Nick Pollock setting the standard. So listen, follow me at Joe Galina, follow Scott at If the Chew Fits, follow our podcast at Hacks and Jacks PL. If there's anything specific that you'd like us to go over in the off season, please let us know. You can reach us there. You can reach out to us on those Twitter handles that I just gave you and follow at Pitcher List Pods. You'll be informed anytime a new episode drops for any of the great podcasts that are featured on the Pitcher List Podcast Network and subscribe to Hacks and Jacks on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a nice review. And as always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities. You have 2 weeks to bring home those championships. Keep playing. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great week and we'll see you next time.